Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Marta Hernandez-Salvin and Arturo Lopez Levy. Arturo Lopez Levy is a former political analyst with the Cuban government and is now a lecturer and PhD candidate at the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. He teaches Latin American politics and comparative politics at the University of Denver and the Colorado School of Mines. And Marta Hernandez-Salvin is a professor of Hispanic studies at the University of California, Riverside, whose current research focuses on the ideological and emotional trauma created after the withering of the socialist utopia in Cuba. Her forthcoming book, Hyperbolic Moment, studies the work of Cuban post-revolutionary poets and essayists. Welcome to Background Briefing, Marta Hernandez-Salvin and Arturo Lopez Levy. Hello.
It's a great pleasure.
Well, let me begin.
Well, good afternoon, Ian.
Good afternoon, Marta. Let me begin with Arturo. There's obviously a gulf between the rhetoric used by the Pope in his first day in Cuba, calling for an open society, and a Cuban government official statement that there will be no political reform in Cuba. But first of all, since you've worked for the Cuban government in the past, what does the Cuban government get out of improving its relationships with the Catholic Church and the Vatican?
Well, I worked for the Cuban government in 1994. It was a long time ago. But as an analyst, what I see is that the visit of the Pope and the special relationship and dialogue between the government and the Catholic Church is building a special channel of communication, a dialogue between the two most important organizations of the island today. In one side is the Communist Party and the government that has close to 800,000 members. And on the other side, you have the most relevant, the organization with the highest number of members in the Cuban civil society. This is very important because the party need somebody to tell them what is happening in civil society. They know firsthand because they have ways to test the waters and to learn about the opinions of the people. But on the other hand, the pluralism that is growing in civil society reach its highest expression in this organization that is national, is very well connected in all the national territory. It's also present in every diaspora community of Cubans in the United States, in Venezuela, in Mexico, in Spain. And also, it's an organization that has been able in the past to reverse the policies of official atheism and develop a network of educational institutions, publications, institution for poverty alleviation that are very important in the Cuban context.
And Marta Hernandez-Salvin, yes. You go to Cuba a lot, and my understanding is that only about 10% of Cubans are practicing Catholics. Something like 80% practice some form or other of an Afro-Cuban religion, including Santeria. But I also understand that there are about some 600,000 Cubans now have been sort of converted to Protestant evangelical religion, and that is a trend throughout Latin America. The growth of charismatic Protestant evangelicals, which I understand has got the Catholic Church concerned. Are they concerned? They're concerned about Cuba as well in that regard.
Well, you know, I think what I have noticed every time that I've gone to Cuba lately is that actually the number of Catholic practitioners has raised considerably because of the fact that the Catholic Church provides with social services that the government is unable to provide the citizens with at this point. such as, books, free food, entertainment, etc. On the other hand, what you're saying is true, right? And I think that have been caused by the lack of hope in the younger generation, which are becoming more and more apolitical. And as everywhere else, the rise of all these other religions happens because there is a lack of ideological content in in the type of socialism that the state is still promoting, and that makes young people to go towards other areas of that can give them something to believe in. So I think that's happening as in other countries,
Well, let me ask Arturo Lopez Levy. Before the Pope arrived in Cuba, he was talking about Cuba, and he said it's evident today that Marxist ideology, as it has been conceived, no longer responds to reality. New models must be found though with patience. So, is the dream dead? The utopia dead? Particularly, as Marta said, for the young in Cuba.
Well, let me say something that is connected with what you just said. The fact that the Pope is in Cuba and he's telling this message, and the Bishop of Santiago de Cuba in the Mass yesterday talk about the end of foreign intervention, or he advocate for the end of foreign intervention in Cuban affairs, but he also advocate for national reconciliation and a dialogue between Cubans with different ideas. Or send a message to the world of a society in transition, a society that is in search of new paradigms. It's obvious that even former President Fidel Castro said that the Cuban model doesn't work even for us. That was quote unquote. So there is a debate there. There is a society in transition, and the world and Cuba both gain with the fact that this image of a society changing is going to the United States, to Canada, to the different parts of the world. I think that the dream, when you ask me about the dream, I need to separate two dreams, because Cubans of different ideas have dreamed together in the same bed, but they have different dreams. And beneath the Marxist-Leninist paradigm, there has been always a strong Cuban nationalism. And this Cuban nationalist utopia of building a country that need to be respected by the whole international community, and its sovereignty need to be respected by the United States, is a dream that has not died. The communist dream, I think, is on his way out. I'm not saying that all the dream of social justice is exhausted, because there is a great desire and a leftist culture in Cuba, but the idea of a Marxist-Leninist country, an atheist country, is gone. But the nationalist dream is well and alive.
So, Marta Hernandez-Salvan, a bishop from Miami also spoke in San Diego, and apparently to great applause. There were also a number of Cuban Americans who'd come over from Miami. So how does that work on the ground in Cuba, the disconnect between the official rhetoric? And again, when Raul Castro greeted the Pope, he talked about how the country remains determined to chart its own path and resist efforts by the most forceful power that history has ever known, referring to the United States. So How does this sort of love-hate thing work on the ground?
Okay. Well, you know, I think the rapprochement with the church is actually a minor political concession that the government has been making since the first visit of John Paul II, 1998. But there's a previous history to that because, you know, the Castros were raised by the Jesuits, you know, so actually Fidel Castro has always had these strong humanist principles that, you know, were part of the doctrine of Jesuism. And so then in the 80s, he had all these relationships with the theology of liberation and with, you know, the theologians, poets of Nicaragua, Ernesto Cardenal. Then, you know, Fray Beto visited the island, and that went very well. So there's always been, you know, a connection between certain ideals of, you know, social justice that both the Christian church and the revolution have had in common, you know. So I think that's still there, for sure. Then you have to take into account also that when, you know, the visit of John Paul II, it went very well because actually the Pope criticized neoliberalism, you know, which I think, you know, the government could not expect that to happen. So, you know, if you have all this in mind and then, you know, you think about the fact that, I think there's a strong Catholic population in Cuba, you know, and that's, as I was saying before, it's a minor political concession. So why not, you know, to have this strategic alliance with the church, which, you know, is going to help them, for example, with the negotiations of the American embargo. It's going to help them with the international community, you know, insofar as, you know, they now look like a tolerant country, which, you know, has been modernized and westernized. And on the other hand, feed this, you know, this again, you know, this lack that the people have, this hope that the people have in that the regime can, like, you know, like Arturo was saying, can change paradigms, that there's a possibility of a change, you know?
Well, you referred to the Pope's denunciation, if you will, of capitalism, where he said there's a profound spiritual moral crisis which has left humanity devoid of values and defenseless before the ambition and selfishness of certain powers which take little account of the true good of individuals and families. Let me ask Arturo about what appears to be the official government line, and it comes up all the time. It's led people to think that the embargo has been one of the stupidest policies in political history, in the sense that the Castro brothers continually refer to it. He did again, when he met the Pope, referring to the overshadowing power next door. But on the other hand, you have increased tourism, and you have people coming in from Miami, as a number did for the Pope's visit. What's your sense on the ground of how Cubans navigate between the personal and the personal interchanges with Americans and the official political line against the American colossus?
Well, I'll go to Cuba generally once or twice a year. And when I go there, what I feel on the people is that there is a great opposition to the embargo, not only by the government, but also by anybody in the society, not only the church, the Protestant churches, the Jewish community, the Muslim community that it's also growing there. And this is a general feeling. At the same time, due to the recent speeches of Raúl Castro and the debate that is happening in the island, many people are saying most of our economic problems are our own responsibility. The embargo is making things worse. The embargo is making more difficult to have an open debate about some of our problems, but the embargo is not the main reason of the difficult economic situation that Cuba has. This is very important because even Raúl Castro said that in a speech, that people should not use the embargo anymore as an alibi for everything. That said, it's clear that in the opposition against the embargo, there are coincidences between the church and the government, and I would say most of the Cuban population, and even now, 55% of the Cuban-American community. It's very interesting what you asked, Marta, about the Cuban-American community, because the, for the first time, or different from the visit in 1998, the Bishop of Miami has support the pilgrimage to the island, and even two Cuban-American bishops, one of them is the bishop from St. Augustine, has gone to Cuba as part of this trip. Obviously, the embargo is still a problem. The Cuban government will use every single opportunity to bring the issue to the press, because it's a very unpopular policy, not only in Cuba. It's very unpopular policy in the whole world. Some days ago, there was a discussion in Washington between Thomas Friedman, the columnist of the New York Times, and Celso Amorim, the former Brazilian Minister of Foreign Policy, of Foreign Affairs, and the discussion was if the embargo was among the five stupidest, most stupid policies of the United States, or the embargo was among the 10 most stupid policies of the United States. The discussion was between the fifth or the 10 more stupid policies. So it's very unpopular, even in Washington.
Well, let me ask Mader about the influence or perhaps the waning influence of the Miami Cubans. A rising star in the Republican Party is Senator Marco Rubio. He's often touted as a possible vice presidential candidate. He's opposed the moderation of the Cuban Bishop Cardinal Ortega, and that seems to be completely, you know, in line with that kind of boneheaded tradition that Arturo just talked about in terms of the American lexicon of stupidity. What's your understanding of whether or not that kind of rhetoric is on the way out, and that kind of implication that the cardinal in Cuba, who's doing a lot of worthwhile work behind the scenes, is being castigated by the Miami Cubans for abandoning the moral imperatives and the moral strength of the church, etc.?
Well, you see, I in that sense, I think I disagree with what Arturo has said, because I don't see that this rhetoric of the evil of the empire has disappeared or is in any way disappearing. I would actually say it's the other way around, you know, because you had Raúl in the sixth Congress of the party last year say that again, you know, that the economic problems of the country have two sources. One of them is, you know, the embargo, and the other one is the corruption and the fact that people are corrupt when they didn't used to be corrupt. They don't have any work ethics anymore. Neoliberal ideas are entering the country, and so on and so forth. So, and again, you have, for example, this campaign of the five prisoners of the, you know, the five heroes, the five prisoners of the country, which, you know, the constant call to, and Well,
yes, I understand that and there's also an American, Alan Gross, who's also a prisoner there as well.
Yes.
And there may be some sort of deal somewhere down the pike. I'm afraid, Arturo and Marta, we've run out of time here. I thank you both for joining us. I'm sorry if we don't have enough time, but we'll revisit this subject.
Okay. Well,
thank you so much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Arturo Lopez Levy, who is a former political analyst with the Cuban government. He's now a lecturer and PhD candidate at the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. He also teaches Latin American politics and comparative politics at the University of Denver and the Colorado School of Mines. And Marta Hernandez-Salvan is a professor of Hispanic Studies at the University of California in Riverside, whose current research focuses on the ideological and emotional trauma created after the withering of the socialist utopia in Cuba. Her forthcoming book, Hyperbolic Moment, studies the work of Cuban post-revolutionary poets and essayists. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about ALEC. Say you want a rebel.